This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the Board of Directors for SASC Canola has elected a new chair. We'll speak with Bernie McLean of Glassland, who took over the job on Tuesday. Two resolutions were passed at multiple Crop Development Commission annual general meetings Tuesday at CropSphere. We'll talk about them with Brett Halstead, who is from Nokomis and is chair of the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission. The Western Canadian Wheat Growers Association is urging producers to provide input on a code of practice being developed by the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Crops. We'll speak with Saskatchewan Director Jeff Bennett on that. And a market analyst believes half of the 2021 crop will be priced before it comes off the combine this fall. We'll speak with Errol Anderson, who is with ProMarket Communications in Calgary. All that and more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, very windy still. It looks like our snow and freezing rain, though, might be over.
Yeah, the precipitation is still there, but it is increasingly light. And on the Saskatchewan side of the line, it's much more spotty. Still some light snow, we'll call it, for western Manitoba, but elsewhere, mostly nuisance-type flurries, meaning it's not going to amount to much where it does continue. But even as the snow tapers off, the wind is still blowing it around, so the snow that has fallen is likely going to still get whipped around, reducing visibility at times. So we're not done with that. In fact, through the night, we'll likely still be dealing with some flurries, with some blowing snow, I should say. Temperatures are going to be falling. We have been pretty steady, very slowly falling through the day. We had a high early on this morning of -1. Actually, excuse me, zero. It was zero right at midnight. Then it climbed to one and then dropped back. And we've been wobbling between -2, -1, and -3 since then, since 2 a.m. So a very slow decline. As expected, that decline will continue through the afternoon. It'll be just as slow. Thinking -4 is about where we'll end up the afternoon. But the wind is making it feel that much colder. Wind chills, sure, minus teens, but the wind just smacks you. It's gusting still upwards of 65 to 70 kilometers per hour. Tonight, the wind will subside a bit more, northwest 25 to 50. It's still strong. It's still going to cause blowing snow, drifting snow, but it is coming down and not much new falling. It should exit the entire region by this evening. Tomorrow, partly sunny sky. The wind will continue to diminish so that by the end of the day, there's hardly any wind at all. -8 is tomorrow's high. So I guess it's good that we're picking the cooler day for the wind to come down. Friday night to Saturday, partly cloudy sky with a low -11 at night. Saturday, we'll have a mixture of sunshine and cloud, the high near -3. And most of the weekend overall is in pretty good shape. Cloud and sunshine on Sunday. Temperatures are still going to be above normal. We're in the minus single numbers right through the weekend. There is going to be another disturbance coming in, very slightly cooler on Monday, maybe a few flurries around. But as far as significant snow, we're going to see little or none of that.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw, Shoal Lake Russell, and Roblin are at -3 degrees. Swan River, Dauphin, and Brandon, -2. Regina, Saskatoon, Broadview, Mooseman, and Indian Head, -3 degrees. Hudson Bay, -2. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, -4. The Yorkton-Melville region has blowing snow, a northwest wind at 46, gusting to 65 kilometers an hour. 81% is the relative humidity. The temperature is -2 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like -11 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of +5 degrees, and dropped to a low of minus 8 degrees. There was 2.4 millimeters of water equivalent precipitation that fell in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 12, the normal low minus 24. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:48 this morning, and it will set at 5:10 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was McCreary at plus 7 degrees, the cold spot Grand Rapids at minus 17. The Saskatchewan hotspot was Ville-Marie at plus 10 degrees, the cold spot Prince Albert at minus 17 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after these messages. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. The Board of Directors for Saskanola has elected a new chair. Bernie McLean of Glassland takes over from Wayne Truman, whose term expired on Tuesday. McLean says he's looking forward to the challenge.
I'm happy. Couldn't be more pleased, I guess. It's a great organization and looking forward to moving forward here in the chair position.
You're replacing Wayne Truman. Are those big shoes to fill?
Yeah, Wayne's a great guy. There's probably nobody... Nobody kinder and better when it comes to consideration of the agriculture sector here in Saskatchewan, for sure.
You're also chair of the Canadian Canola Growers Association. How will that work out?
Yeah, it'll be busy. I'll term out as chair at the Canadian Canola Growers Association at the end of February. So I likely wouldn't have considered this SAS Canola position if I was going to be doing double duty. So be chair of SAS Canola moving forward and a director with the Canadian Canola Growers Association.
What issues would you like to see addressed as you go forward as chair of SAS Canola?
Agriculture is an evolving business and things never seem to stop. COVID-19 has obviously limited our abilities to fund research properly, or I shouldn't say fund it properly, but it's actually inhibited some of the research that SAS Canola has invested in. So obviously, number one, as being a research-focused organization, we need to make sure that research is still happening. So that'll be definitely something that we're paying attention to moving forward here. We also focus on market development and advocacy, and then work with our national organizations on lots of the issues that are out there: public trust, the carbon tax issue, and being recognized for the ability to sequester carbon like we do here in Saskatchewan. The Grain Act review is coming up, and so looking forward to continue to work with those organizations on those topics as well.
Earlier this week, it was announced that clubroot is spreading in Saskatchewan canola fields. Are you concerned about that?
Absolutely, and that actually speaks to the research comments here a little bit ago. That work needs to continue. Unfortunately, even in the face of COVID-19, some of these crop diseases, they don't stop just because it's difficult to do the research. So we need that focus to continue.
Other newly elected leadership positions include Lane Stockbruger of Englefield as vice chair and Charlene Bradley of Stranraer as chair of the Audit and Finance Committee. Are you happy with that?
Absolutely. Two very capable individuals, and looking forward to continuing to work with them. Both Lane and Charlene started with SAS Canola at the same time as myself, so we've all been here now 6 years. And if you don't mind, Doug, I'd just like to take a second here to you've mentioned Wayne Truman is timing out as chair on the board, and actually he's termed out as a SAS Canola director as well. I certainly wanted to recognize Doyle Weeb terms out as well after two terms on SAS Canola, and Jerry Hertz is leaving us as well. Obviously, they'll be missed. All three individuals are great mentors and were great advocates for agriculture here.
And is there anything you would like to add?
Well, maybe just shout out to the new directors coming on. We've already mentioned myself, Lane, Charlene, Caitlin Duncan is a director as well, and Keith Fournier returning for his second term, and a shout out to the new guys, Cody Nagy, David Eltrogi, and Dean Roberts. So looking forward to working with those three new directors as well.
That's Bernie McLean of Glasslyn. He's the new chair of Saskanola. Meanwhile, two resolutions were passed at multiple Crop Development Commission annual general meetings Tuesday. The resolutions on carbon pricing and the establishment of an export sales reporting program received broad support from members of the cereal, oilseed, and pulse grower organizations. Brett Halstead from Nokomis is the chair of the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission.
Each commission will take this back to its boards because resolutions are advisory in nature, but having said that, we also recognize the fact that a large number of producers have put forward two very positive resolutions, and that will carry a lot of weight at the board tables, and then it'll be turned to staff to talk to each other and try and develop a plan forward, and then get the boards back involved if needed in doing a little bit of lobbying, whether that's virtually or someday in person again.
So we could see movement on this before the next annual general meeting 1 year from now.
I would suspect and expect that, yes.
The carbon tax resolutions asks the federal government to recognize and reward farmers for CO2 sequestered in the agriculture soils through continuous cropping, as well as reduced or zero till. The resolution for the establishment of an export sales reporting program requests that data be reported daily, compiled weekly, and released in a timely fashion to aid producers in the marketing of their crops. In presenting the resolution, Brent Johnson from Strasbourg, who is also Sask Barley Vice Chair, said markets work best when all players have access to the same information. He adds there is a gap in information access in Canada when compared to the United States. It's now 12:29 on GX on Agriculture, and it's time for the Ag Review portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX 94, Ag Review.
The last vessel of the 2020-2021 shipping season left the port of Thunder Bay on Tuesday, wrapping up the busiest year at the port since 1997. Annual cargo volumes through came in at 10.2 million metric tons, which marked the first time the tonnage topped 10 million since 1997. A total of 9.3 million metric tons of cargo were reported in 2019. Grain accounted for 9.2 million metric tons of the total movement through the port, up from 7.9 million the previous year. Overseas grain demand saw over 150 foreign salty vessels load grain at Thunder Bay in the season, marking the second highest tally at the port since the St. Lawrence Seaway opened in 1959. Several factors contributed to the grain surge, including significant carryover of grain stock from the large 2019 harvest and worldwide stockpiling of staple foods during the pandemic. The BC government says its land matching program linking farmers to landowners has reached a milestone with more than 100 connections. It says farmers in the province have used the program to grow crops and raise livestock on about 2,000 hectares over the past 4 years. The government says 46 land matches were finalized last year, which will bring more local food options to communities. Agriculture Minister Lana Popham says in a statement the program helps farmers access land, keeping it in production, while adding a next generation of agriculture leaders. 90% of the matches are in regions with high real estate prices, including Metro Vancouver, the Fraser Valley, Vancouver Island, and the Okanagan. The businesses farm a range of agricultural products such as sheep, flowers, berries, eggs, honey, mushrooms, and more. Argentine farmers called off a three-day-old sales strike yesterday hours before it had been scheduled to end, after the government agreed to free corn export from a recently decreed limit of 30,000 metric tons a day. The export cap that had been imposed at the start of the week was criticized by growers who said it would weigh on production. Argentina is the world's number three corn exporter and its top international supplier of soy meal livestock feed. The 30,000 metric ton cap on daily corn exports followed a short-lived decision by the government made at the end of December to suspend all corn exports in January and February. The Agriculture Ministry said the export limits were aimed at ensuring ample domestic food supplies and affordable prices. But Argentina's three main growers' organizations objected, saying there was no corn shortage in Argentina and that limiting exports would increase uncertainty. The short-lived sales strike by farmers had no effect on Argentine exports. India's Supreme Court has ordered an indefinite stay on the implementation of new agricultural laws that have triggered widespread protest from farmers, saying it wanted to protect farmers and would hear their objections. For more than a month now, tens of thousands of farmers have camped on the outskirts of New Delhi, the capital, to protest against reform measures that they say benefit large private buyers and harm growers. Farm leaders said their demand for a full repeal of the laws remains unchanged. India says the laws aim to modernize an antiquated farming system bedeviled by wastage and bottlenecks in the supply chain. But farm leaders say the reforms are an attempt to erode a long-standing mechanism that ensures farmers a minimum support price for their crops. And cooperative group InVivo has entered exclusive talks to acquire family-controlled Soufflette in a deal that would create one of Europe's biggest agricultural businesses with 10 billion euros in sales. The potential consolidation comes as France, the European Union's largest agricultural producer, is trying to embrace environmentally conscious farming practices while vying with cheaper grain suppliers such as Russia. A tie-up would also let InVivo, a grouping of 192 farmer-owned cooperatives, and century-old Soufflette, better compete with rivals such as U.S. group Cargill and Germany's BayWa. The transaction price, that is, was not disclosed. The deal, under which the Soufflette brand would be preserved, could close by the end of 2021. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. We have blowing snow and -2 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. The Western Canadian Wheat Growers Association is urging producers to provide input on a code of practice being developed by the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Crops. Saskatchewan Director Jeff Bennett says it's called Responsible Grain.
I think it's important that farmers understand how this could impact their business, first of all. The code itself is a voluntary code, so its data would be collected through polling and all data would be aggregate. But the code of practice itself has some very interesting content in it that we as an organization and myself as a farmer definitely want to have even more farmer input than it already has, because this only affects farmers. All the recommended practices and required practices that are included in this only affect the farmer.
Do you have any concerns about this program?
Well, the some of the interesting points are some of the recommended practices seem to be a little more farmer-friendly than the required ones, which is interesting in itself. But obviously, as as a code of practice would be voluntary, the threat, I guess, is that it would become mandatory and used by the government to implement some mandatory regulations and impose them on farmers themselves. That's the first red flag that I sort of thought maybe it's a bit of a conspiracy theorist, but with the government in power right now, you never really know. And so I think that the best point moving forward is to make this work for farmers, have it be, you know, practices that they're already doing to showcase instead of change what practices we're doing. So like I said, the more farmer involvement in this, the better, and hopefully they listen.
Would this code of practice include assuring consumers that chemical use on the farm won't harm them in any way?
Absolutely. Chemicals are, number one, expensive. No farmer wants to over-apply or have that chemical not be completely effective in its application. So not that concern isn't warranted, but it's in the farmer's best interest to apply it by the guidelines, practices that are already law by the label of the chemical. And I think that if you can capture that in a code of practice, just that, you know, when we're handling it, that we are being safe for our own safety, as well as the environment, that all falls into things that we're already doing.
And obviously the chemical residue dissipates and leaves the crop in a safe condition.
Right, and following pre-harvest intervals, you know, when you're killing weeds in the crop before harvest, before you take it off, those all need to be followed. And I think that we as farmers know that, and most of us, hopefully all of us, follow those regulations that are already in place.
Is there a deadline to submit comments by?
The sooner the better, obviously. I think that the code of practice people, the responsible grains, have added more sessions, which is incredibly positive. So the more they know, I think the only concern, I guess, as far as a timeline, is that they have enough time to take all this information that's being put forward to them again from farmers to be able to get it in place before their deadlines that they have. And I know they have some spring to end of year deadlines for having this code be in place. So the sooner the better, I think, for them and for us to be able to, you know, have something that works for everyone in this.
Submissions can be made at responsiblegrain.ca. That was Jeff Bennett. He is a Saskatchewan director with the Western Canadian Wheat Growers Association, and he farms near Dodsland. It's now 12:41 on GX on Agriculture.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 111.90, down 35. April live cattle trading at 117.12, also down 35. March feeder cattle trading at 133.62, down 70. April feeder cattle trading at 136.17, down 57. February lean hogs trading at 66.62, down 22. April lean hogs trading at 72.40, down 55. And that's the livestock market conditions. Now it's time for the Heartland Livestock Report from Yorkton.
Hello, Cattleman Junior for Heartland Livestock Services of Yorkton with your market report for the week of January 13th. We had a big run on offer this week with 33.57 in the pre-sort and 400 cows and bulls in the regular sale for a total of 37.57. On the feeder market, we saw all the light cattle trending steady to a little higher. The heavier cattle, which are 750 pounds and up, were under a little pressure this week. Here are a few results of this week's sale. 158 black steers, 562 pounds at $218.50. 636 pounds at $2.75. 711 pounds at $183.50. 40 buckskin steers, 573 pounds at $218.50. 640 pounds at $203. And their 716 pound brothers at $1.89. 40 red X steers, 571 pounds at $214, 641 pounds at $1.95.50, and their 711 pound brothers at $182.75. The heifers are still trending 20 to 25 cents back from the steers. 84 black heifers at $6.35 at $1.71 and a quarter. 64 buckskin heifers, $640 at $1.76.50, and 37 red X heifers, $635 at $1.69. On the cow and bull trade this week, our cows averaged 68 with a high of 80. D1, D2 cows, 69 to 76, and D3s at 55 to 63. The bulls averaged 97.5 with a high of $1.10. Also, producers, our bred cow sale slated for this Friday has been canceled due to the weather and road conditions. Our next cow sale is on January 29th at 11 a.m. With most of these cows going to this sale, we will have 400 head in our next sale. Please go to our website for complete details of the sale listings. Next Friday, January 22nd, is our monthly sheep and goat sale. We will be receiving Thursday from noon till 8 and Friday up until sale time. Our horse sale is also on Friday at 3 p.m. In closing, I would like to remind our producers that our pre-sorts are filling up and we will not turn anyone away. We are here to sell cattle and that is what we do. Once again, thank you and have a great day.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's 12:44 and a market analyst believes half of the 2021 crop will be priced before it even comes off the combine this fall. Errol Anderson is with ProMarket Communications in Calgary, and he says canola continues to rise in value.
Well, we're in an amazing circumstance right now. We've got a key buyer, China, that is just buying everything they can get their hands on from South America into North America, and they're cleaning out the shelves. Like the shelves, soybean shelves in the States are basically going to be bare this year. Canola is going to be extremely tight. We had quite a shock in the USDA report yesterday when the U.S. government decided to cut the corn yields, 3 bushels an acre, down to 172 per acre in the month of January. We've never seen that before when a government has adjusted the yields this late in the game. And, of course, the corn market went limit up 25 cents. Overnight it went limit up again, another 25 cents. So we have got a situation where we're going to be simply short of grain. And, it's not just canola that's moving higher. It's really quite broad-based. We're going to see the wheat markets have been strengthening, the CPS red, the milling wheat. Barley market has just been absolutely on fire. So we're at the top of this. We're not sure. The market is going to be straining until the demand stops. And this whole situation is to reduce the demand. At some point, once the sales are completed, the buyers will stop buying and the market will fail. But right now, it feels like this canola market could potentially move higher yet. We've seen top-end bids move $16 plus right now for spring movement. The futures on the March have pushed into that $690 a metric ton. So the guns are still blazing, and we really don't know where the highs are just yet.
Is China buying more of our canola now?
Oh, sure. It's going through different networks. But the bottom line is that China is at food risk. And they've got a situation where they need a good new crop. They need South America to regenerate their crop. And so we have the El Nino situation, the La Nina situation that has created drought conditions in Argentina and uncertainty into the American Midwest. So with these uncertainties, I think the market will be on alert as we head into the spring market. The big question right now is acres. With the corn market flaring the way it is, where are the acres going to come from to satisfy this demand? So we have to look into the northern U.S. side, into the spring wheat acres. So if there's a battle for spring wheat to turn it over to other crops, that suggests that the Minneapolis spring wheat could move higher as well.
So are there any weak commodities on the markets right now?
Well, I guess if you talk about a weak commodity, I would say the edible pea market right now, the yellows are fairly stable. The green pea market actually has been coming down. So those markets, yellow bids are in that $9, $9.25 per bushel range. The greens, which were as high as $11 earlier in the fall, have now slipped down toward $9. And again, that's demand from India has slowed. India is regenerating their pulse crop. But this is a different market. As far as the wheat side, CPS red wheat bids have moved into that $7 up to about $7.50 per bushel. This is just remarkable. For higher protein milling wheat, the bids have moved up into that $8 range. Again, we believe this is a pretty good pricing spot for the market. What could happen is that we could see the futures spike, but the basis levels will suddenly widen out. So we saw that in 2008 when we saw a spike then, and this could be the situation coming up as we head into the spring market.
Do you see China turning their backs on our crops again?
Well, they need these crops. They've got a massive population that is now finding that their reserves have been drained down. So for now, I think as we head into the spring market, the market should be fairly firm. Now, the one question mark is the commodity funds. Commodity funds have been building a huge long position in these markets. They're record positions. After yesterday's USDA bullish corn report, the funds just added more long positions. Now, at some point, when they start to liquidate, we will see a downturn in this market, and it'll be rather sharp. But where that is, I don't think the market knows right now.
Switching gears, are there any bright spots for cattle right now?
Well, the cash bids are moving gradually higher. The Alberta fat prices have moved above $1.40 per pound now. The feeder cattle futures, unfortunately, this week with the spike in the corn, have spooked the feeder cattle lower. And that's the market that's really having a tough go at the moment. The Fed market, the beef demand is actually quite strong. And packers are going into full shifts now. So the demand, we believe, into late January and into February is going to be quite strong. So the bargaining power on the Fed market is starting to shift toward the feeder. But the packers are still making great money, but the feeders are probably the weak link. The cow market also is firming up. We've seen this market move up above 5 to 7 cents per pound on cows. We believe that the strength in the D1, D2 prices should firm up into about mid-February.
And how about the hog market?
Well, again, it's a function of meat supply. I believe the hog market is steady. I think the supplies are adequate right now, so we probably won't see a lot of change in the hog price. We'll have to watch the Canadian dollar. We believe that the loonie is close enough to 80 cents that it might challenge it. It's because of more potential further weakness in the U.S. dollar, so we'll have to wait on that one. But certainly the Canadian dollar will tell a tale in the livestock market in Canada.
So what's your outlook for the days and weeks ahead?
Well, I think we have to look at new crop, and growers will be actively pricing grain into new crop, and in fact, I think half of this crop will be priced before it comes off the combine this year. The one key thing is that buyers are going to start to book up, and if you want to reserve space for the fall market, I think you have to get in there with a contract in order to get the movement. If not, you may be waiting till the next calendar year to move your grain. The basis levels, I think right now, are somewhat weak on canola for new crop, but again, there are a number of growers right now on the canola side that are actually getting January 2022 canola put options as a guard, and then that way, that strategy, that allows the grower the upside in the cash market in case the summer market does blow higher, and also they can wait on the basis levels to lock it after combining is over.
That's Errol Anderson. He's with ProMarket Communications. It's coming up on 12:53 on GX and Agriculture, and it's time for the Commodities Update. And that's a presentation of Ray Nordine, your REMAX Bridge City Realty Agent.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trading up across the board again today. March canola trading at $689 per metric ton, up $4.30. May canola trading at $673.70, up $5.30. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $639.75, that's up 11 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $6.39 per bushel, up 13 and a quarter cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $6.70 and three quarters, up 10 and a quarter cents. March corn trading at $5.35 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters of a cent. March soybeans trading at $14.32 and a quarter, up 26 cents. March oats trading at $3.66 per bushel, up 4 and a quarter cents. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. We'll have your Farm Bulletin Board coming up right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
A unique new app developed by the University of Saskatchewan offers agricultural landowners tailored information about the carbon offset value of planting shelter belts, a tool that could help reduce the carbon footprint of farming and potentially put a little extra money in farmers' pockets. Since the Dirty 30s, shelter belts have been used to protect crops from wind, prevent soil erosion, and help retain moisture, which increases crop yield. But now field shelter belts are being removed to make room for larger agricultural equipment and more crop production. What some farmers may not realize is that the trees, roots, and soil of shelter belts sequester enormous amounts of CO2 from the atmosphere. It's estimated that a total of more than 21.3 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent is stored in Saskatchewan's 60,000 kilometers of shelter belts. That represents about $639 million in total economic value under the federal $30 per metric ton carbon dioxide equivalent pricing system. The free online app was developed by a large multidisciplinary team of climate scientists, economists, soil scientists, and computer scientists who were granted $1.4 million by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in 2018 as part of an effort to reduce greenhouse gases in agriculture. In its latest climate change action plan, the Saskatchewan government is proposing to pay farmers for storing carbon, not just charging agricultural producers for emitting carbon into the atmosphere. The new app helps landowners calculate how much carbon will accumulate in trees planted in shelter belts under changing climatic conditions and determine how much their shelter belts are worth in carbon offset value under the carbon tax system. It also includes a planning tool that shows the best type of trees to grow in various areas of the province and provides users with planting guidelines to ensure their new trees thrive. Based on years of scientific knowledge gathered by researchers, the app conveys the information in a way that is easy to navigate and to understand from the user's point of view. So to access this app, simply visit www.shelterbelt-sk.ca. Once again, www.shelterbelt-sk.ca. The Manitoba government is launching an online public engagement to help identify opportunities within the agri-food system, particularly in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. A number of initiatives are undertaken annually to support education of Manitoba's agri-food sector, including Agriculture Awareness Day and Farm and Food Awareness Week. These events provide the public with the opportunity to connect with agriculture and food production to learn more about the industry. The pandemic has also brought an increased awareness to food-related issues, creating dialogue about food security, food safety, and the supply chain. The outcome of this engagement will inform the province's public trust initiatives for the agri-food system. To take part in this engagement, visit engagemb.ca. The online public engagement will close on February 5th. And that's today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock, and it's time to check the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions. The blizzard warning has ended. For today, cloudy with a 50% chance of flurries with blowing and drifting snow. Winds northwest at 40 to 60, gusting to 70 at times. the temperature falling to minus 4. For tonight, cloudy with a 30% chance of flurries with blowing and drifting snow, winds northwest at 25 to 50, and a low of minus 11. For tomorrow, partly sunny, winds northwest at 15 to 25, and a high of minus 8. For Saturday, a mix of sun and cloud, winds west-northwest at 15 to 30, a high of minus 4. Sunday, cloudy, also a high of minus 4. Monday, flurries, and a high of minus 6. In the Paw, Show Lake Russell and Roblin, it's minus 3 degrees. Swan River, Dauphin and Brandon, minus 2. Regina, Saskatoon, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, minus 3. Hudson Bay, minus 2. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 4. The Yorkton-Melville region has blowing snow, a northwest wind at 46 gusting to 65 kilometers an hour. 81% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 2 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 11 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.